Again, my name is Minister Sherry Murphy. I bring you greetings from Heart and Soul Center of Light, where Reverend Andreette Earle is my senior minister, a very powerful woman of African descent. And I just want to give thanks for the ministry of music today. I was just having a conversation earlier about music is everything. It really is. It is the it's the sermon, because you really could just take out the sermon and sing because of the powerful, transformative power of music. So if you don't know that, here's the lesson today. Music is ministry. I was moved by the music selections. Susan had called me earlier last week, or I had called her earlier last week, as relates to what were the specifics that I wanted to have with music, whether or not I had any requests. And what I found is that if I let it go and allow this energetic that surrounds us all, that is all entangled in the pursuit of justice and love, it always ends up just so beautifully. So I just want to acknowledge you today. I'm giving reverence to the energetic that does surround us, that goes by many names. The one that I call the living one, the God, the creator of all. Good morning. I also want to honor the indigenous land that we stand on today. I want to honor that it is American History Month, even though we call it Black History Month. Today I bring this into the space my ancestors, which the music has already done today. Those have gone before me, the ones who through their action supported the embodiment of Black resilience. Because that really speaks to the lens in which I preach from. I am committed to confronting traditions of biblical religiosity and reverence. That means that I center my experiences of what it means to be a queer Black woman, my lived experience. Therefore, when I look at initiatives and policies on race, I must look at it from the history of economic development, which involved chattel slavery. And it's important that we use the framework in which to discuss Black people's agency, or lack thereof, in response to a gendered and racist system dominated by constructs of whiteness. I don't know who you got here today, but I'm just bringing it all to you. And that we look at it through the lens, and that we look at it through this lens today. I invite you to do that. That will help to challenge our habits and our behaviors, or bring in some awareness that we weren't really into or knowing about. And today I want to talk to you about what it takes, what the risk-taking is involved. That requires that we take great risks today, be okay with being misunderstood or deemed controversial or maybe even confrontational, even if it means that we disrupt the very practice that is literally killing us all. See, this sermon is based on the works of theologian Katie Cannon, referencing her methodology involving a daily practice of examining one's own value system and to resolve to do the work one's soul must have in order for liberation. And thank you, brother. Also, the 1964 speech of Fannie Lou Hamer, a leader of the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, who spoke before the Credentials Committee of the Democratic National Convention in Atlantic City. And references from the 1963 letter of the Alabama City Jail, specifically Martin Luther King's Reflections of Creative Tension. And this brings me what I want to share today. The question behind the question. It's commissioning us to take risk for and about change, with the power and authority that is already invested in us through the divine. It is imperative that we make a change, and that we must ask ourselves, what will it take to expand our bonus for justice and love? Because what we really love is only as good as the work we do to creating a just and loved world. Yes? So I also want to tell you that I am from the South. I've grown up in a Black church experience, which means that I am very used to call and responses. Who's familiar with call and responses? Okay. So I'm going to invite you to practice a call and response, which literally means that if you agree with something, say Ashe. Can we say that together?
Ashe.
Say God is love. And if you agree with that, say Ashe.
Ashe.
You can also say amen, which literally means I'm in agreement with you. Yeah? So let's practice saying amen. God is love.
Amen.
Okay. Because I may be speaking, but this configuration of the group today is the sermon. It is the embodiment. It is your thoughts, your actions, your behaviors. It's what's bringing it in today. So this is a very exciting moment because we're never going to get a moment like this ever again. Yes?
Amen.
All right. The commission also this morning is to get prepared and ready for our city budgets. Collectively, we must be in dialogue about the midterm implications and begin to develop strategies and actions, building collaborative efforts that will change the cruel laws and policies fueled by a racist economic agenda. So before I get started, did I hear amen?
Amen.
Amen. So as we prepare our body temples for the sermon today, I invite you to take a deep breath. As I read a quote from Martin Luther King that I use religiously as my prayer. Use me, God. Show me how to take who I am, who I want to be, what I can do, and use it for a purpose greater than myself.
Amen.
Amen. That's what's up. Fannie Lou Hamer was known for her deeply honest speeches and inquiries. The one that got her national name recognition was her August 22, 1964 testimony to the Democratic National Convention's Credentials Committee, calling for her Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, which helped African Americans register to vote, to be integrated with the state's all-white delegation to the convention. She explained what she had been through in the early 60s when she had been kicked off of the plantation she grew up for trying to register people to vote, and how she was arrested and beaten in Wayona, Mississippi, jail while coming back from a voter registration workshop in Charleston, South Carolina. The results of that, doing that kind of work, left her with kidney damage, a blood clot to her left eye, and a limp. She was beaten so bad. She said this to the committee in 1964, and hear these words with your hearts, bodies, and mind. All this is on account of what we want to register to vote, to become first-class citizens. And if the Freedom Democratic Party is not seated now, I question America. Is this America the land of the free and the home of the brave, where we have to sleep with our telephones off the hooks because our lives be threatened daily? Because we want to live as decent human beings in America. The force of Hamer's question, with its devastatingly disruptive testimony, tells the listener what it means when others look at you like you're nobody. The sister knows all too well the consequences of her skin color, what anti-blackness feels like, what poverty looks like, the stench of black bodies resulting from state violence. She is way too familiar with the sound of gunshots, sleepless nights due to phone threats, and the false hope that comes from smokescreen policies, unjust laws from elected officials. In this question, There are no illusionary walls one can take solace in, preventing them to see the world in which she lives. You see, the question behind her question is really asking, what will it take to expand our boldness for justice and love? Because what we really love is only good as the work as we do for creating a just and loving world. In Fannie Lou Hamer's testimony, she offers the listener the most evasive and eluding element of our times today. Not 1964, 2019. She offers us, the listener, the most evasive and eluding element of our times, taking risk. Generally, many of us are not engaged in this daily lifestyle of taking great risks for the liberation of all. I just got to say it. Can I just preach today? Within this context, risk-taking is a kind of truth-telling that is explicit. It has the capacity to break through the layers of apathy and disrupt us to our very core. This process cultivates power and authority, and it involves a lifelong practice of self-examination. It involves constantly asking oneself to identify challenges in one life, the choices we made, the outcome in our lives, and given our context, the world in which we live in. It really beckons us to ask, do our attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors really, really promote the gospel of love and justice? You see, risk involves changing things, discovering things, inventing things, setting them in motion. It is our God-given creativity, the unlimited possibilities which eradicates the status quo. Amen. This practice of taking risk connects us to our spirit. And as the womanist theologian Katie Cannon describes, this kind of truth-telling will make your teeth itch. The kind of truth-telling that will make your mind lose your mind up in here, up in here. And I may add, the kind of truth-telling that make you go all up and out, up in here, up in here. Yes, this, come on, brother. Yes, this form of truth-telling involves risk. And as one grows in his spiritual practice, and for some, becomes less afraid of the literal or figurative death of all that we have known, it is confrontational. Because what we really love is really as good as the work that you do to back it up. If the work that you do toward ending racial justice doesn't cause you to tear up, have goosebumps, get angry, when a song comes up like "We Shall Overcome," have tears stream down your face, get angry, be at a loss for words, cry, does it make your teeth itch, be disappointed, want to lose your mind up in here, it is not big enough. It is vital when we bring ourselves into the work, we are not just intellectuals, always in our heads. We must practice bringing our bodies and our hearts as well. Amen. So fast forward from 1964 to today. Pick a locality.
Chicago.
How about here?
Berkeley.
Oakland. Atlanta. And then shake your head. Communities once with a flourishing multicultural presence is now reeling from cruel market-driven developments, not privileged for most Black and multi-ethnic communities who have lived there for generations. Is this America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, where we push out Black and brown bodies because we've allowed our planning departments, boards, and commissions to choose profits over people? Is this America the land of the free and a home of the brave where we demonize our homeless? Is this the land of the free and a home of the brave where there are as many as 9,000 people living in the streets of East Bay while city-owned buildings and abandoned schools remain empty? Most of these people, African-Americans and multi-ethnic communities, Our elected officials' phones on silent because of the refusal to allow our brothers and sisters live as decent human beings. You see, I get baffled when political leaders think it is okay to spend millions of dollars in treated tool sheds instead of the money going toward tiny homes on public land for public good. Is America really free when black girls like Nia Wilson and her sister cannot safely ride the BART? Or Jessica St. Louis is one more victim of the multiple Santa Rita jail failures. I feel threatened daily in rent boards and commissions as they have ties to real estate developments. So what does it mean to live as decent human beings to know that California is the fifth wealthiest economy in the world? The East Bay is third behind New York City and Hong Kong, where millionaires live. Meanwhile, there are people who are experiencing hunger. How can my nephew's humanity be free when the world in which we currently have created was not designed by him, God designed for him? See, with the power and authority that is already in us to make change, what is the question that we must ask ourselves? What will it take to expand our boldness for justice and love? Because what we really love is as only as the good as the work we do to create a loving and just world. As I was writing this, I was envisioning our churches, our faith-based institutions, our spiritual communities, attending city council meetings and boards on behalf of African Americans and multi-ethnic communities. If you haven't already, I'm inviting you to all start doing that. Because these groups, my tribe, cannot do it by themselves. We can't work for collective liberation with just one type of folks doing that. Before you do, please do some homework. If you haven't done this, before you do, please do some homework and get in the know about a couple of things. Like, do you know who your city council members are? Would you be able to pick out who your district representative is? Be aware of their voting history and getting to know about their priorities in the budget cycle for this year. Which ones have proposed language to end the social legacy of the early zoning movement lived in on the politics of urban America today? Are you willing to challenge planners to adopt a more inclusionary approach to urban development? Who endorsed the sweeping of encampments? Basically said yes to disparities and inequities. Are you aware of the teachers' strikes who say they can't afford to live in a city in which they work in? In Oakland, do you know who endorsed the promotion of police officers who are sexual predators of our children? Do you know what receivership is and what it has to do with public safety? Or perhaps electoral politics is not your calling. What about joining a group around public safety, around discussions on not solely relying on police? That's a good one. Are you willing to support and engage in training around restorative justice, de-escalation techniques? Because many times it doesn't require a badge and a gun to do all of that. My white brothers and sisters, this message is specifically for you. Why is the Nextdoor app a target for black folk? Why does black skin always have to be suspicious? Here's a question. Are you involved in black-led grassroots organizations such as the Anti-Police Terror Project or other organizations? And if not, ask yourself why. Because what we really good love is as really good as the work that we do to back it up. Amen?
Amen.
I'm beckoning you to think differently about what safety means. Should it be predicated on violence for African Americans and other multi-ethnic groups? I should certainly pray not. Here's my conclusion. because I understood I only had a couple minutes, because I could go on and on. I'm sure that none of you would want to rest content with the superficial kind of social analysis that deals merely with the effects and does not grapple with underlying causes. I need an amen for that one.
Amen.
Pretend as if we've done something either by endorsing a resolution of some sort, posting a sign, or just walking in a rally, or whatever that case may be. Taking risks involves confronting tension, a nonviolent approach that is necessary, for growth. It seeks to dramatize the issue that it can no longer, so that it can no longer be ignored. It calls you to ask the question, what are you afraid to let go of? If you are on a board for an equitable and sustainable economy, we must name our social economic problems that we have participated in and contributed to in order to work and to work collaboratively to imagine the unlimited possibilities of sustainable and ethical living. Because unless we imagine a different reality, one is not likely to accept it as a possibility. It is a process that will get us to unequivocal, unwavering, speaking truth to power. It will get us to standing and taking risk. The question behind the question is commissioning us to take risks for and about change. Because with the power and authority invested in us that will make the change, what is the question that we must ask ourselves in discerning our boldness and justice for love? Because what we really love is only as good as the work we do to create a loving and just world. Amen?
Amen.
Ashe? And so it is.